You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is off today. The gun debate is one of the most heated issues in American politics. Arguments between gun control advocates and gun rights supporters and battles over the intent of the Second Amendment have played out in the legal system as well as politics at local, state, and national levels. But our next guest says a lot of that debate has been pretty unproductive and it misses out on the realities of why many Americans are choosing to own guns, not just own them, but carry them, and how these decisions relate to wider issues in part of what it means to be a citizen. Joining us now is Jennifer Carlson, sociologist at the University of Toronto. Her new book is Citizen Protectors, The Everyday Politics of Guns in an Age of Decline. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Rob, thank you so much for having me.
So you jumped right into the world of guns. You attended gun-related events, trained to shoot, ended up becoming a trainer, an NRA-certified trainer. Why did you feel it was important to get that up-close personal perspective on the issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I'm obviously, as you just said, a sociologist. And I actually assumed when I was, you know, this was actually my dissertation research. And I assumed when I was picking my topic and I was thinking about, you know, studying guns, that I would just find this wealth of, scholarship that involves, you know, talking to pro-gun Americans, interviewing them, hanging out with them. And what I found was that sociologists haven't really done that. So that was part of the reason that I wanted to kind of actually get up close and personal and talk to the Americans that, you know, find guns so important to their everyday lives that they actually carry them. So part of it was just, you know, the intellectual aspect of it. But then the other part of it really had to do with, the idea that this is not, you know, when you're talking about gun carry, this is not just, you know, this isn't granddaddy's shotgun that you got handed down that maybe is stashed under the bed in the event of a home invasion or something like that. This is something you do. This is something you practice. And so I wanted to, you know, not just talk to gun carriers, but also interview them, hang out with them, go through the training to carry a gun, go through the training to be an NRA instructor to really understand what this kind of the practical aspect of it really is all about.
Now we'll get into some of the individual stories you heard from the people you talked to, but big picture, you saw a theme emerge, a lot of gun owners viewing themselves as, like in the title of your book, citizen protectors. So what do you mean by that phrase, citizen protectors?
Jennifer? Yeah, hello?
Go ahead, yep.
Yeah. That term, this is a term that I'm using in the book. If you talk to someone who, you know, pro-gun advocates, they might use a term like the sheepdog. And so basically what this term refers to is this sort of moral obligation, this moral willingness to use force in order to protect innocent life. According to the citizen protector kind of model of citizenship, it's not just enough to not be a bad guy, right? To be a good guy. If you're a citizen protector, you take it one step further and say you're willing to protect the good guys or the good, you know, the innocent from the bad guys. And so what I argue in the book is that, you know, by looking at it from this lens of kind of duty and obligation, it actually helps to make sense of a lot that sort of operates under the surface in terms of our gun debate. So oftentimes the debate revolves around this question of, you know, individual rights and the right to self-defense. And what I found, and, you know, you can even read the text of, you know, standard ground laws where in the law it actually says, you know, this is not just about self-defense. This also sanctions intervening in crimes, in ongoing crimes. And that there actually is a big discourse of duty to others. And usually that comes out in terms of family, duty to face. Without that kind of extra aspect, it's really hard to sort of understand where pro-gun America is coming from. So that's why I use this term, because it really encapsulates both this sort of right to self-defense, but also this sense of moral politics that's going on.
So in talking to these gun owners, and you did most of this work in Michigan and Detroit and surrounding areas, Flint, Lansing, places like that, and a lot of the people you talk to explain their thinking about this role of protecting people in terms of societal and economic decline. So what were they looking at, and how did guns fit into that?
Yeah, I mean, socioeconomic decline actually is a big theme of the book, and partly this is exactly for the reason that you said. This is, you know, this book is primarily, it's all based in Michigan, looking primarily at Metro Detroit, and looking at how gun carriers see themselves vis-a-vis sort of different kinds of decline. So there's obviously the economic decline, and that has a whole set of sort of socioeconomic insecurities with it, but that translates into also crime, and so a sense that, you know, crime is, maybe it's not going up, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely there as a possible risk. And then the last thing that also is kind of at play is the sense of social services sort of kind of being defunded. So actually, while I was doing the research, Flint laid off half of their police force. Even a place like Ann Arbor was losing police. So there was kind of this sense of, you know, even police are being defunded. And so the community, you know, people have to sort of take on this sort of protection role on themselves.
We're talking about the personal politics of carrying guns, and we'd like to hear from you. Not looking for arguments for and against gun control now. I want to hear your story. If you own firearms, if you carry them, if you view yourself as someone who's protecting others, why? What led you to do that? And if you've made a conscious decision not to own firearms or to own them but maybe only use them for, say, hunting, let us know what was behind your thinking there. You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue our conversation with sociologist Jennifer Carlson. She's the author of the book Citizen Protectors, The Everyday Politics of Guns in an Age of Decline. We're talking about the personal decisions and attitudes toward gun ownership in the United States, and you can join the conversation. Tell us the story of why you do or don't own firearms and why you do or don't carry them concealed or openly. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Sociologist Jennifer Carlson stays with us. Her new book is Citizen Protectors, The Everyday Politics of Guns in an Age of Decline. She embedded herself basically with a pro-gun community, people who own guns, who carried guns, to find out what they were thinking, what led them to make the decisions they did. And Jennifer, you talked to a lot of different people, some African-American working class gun owners, white working class, white middle class. Did they have different perspectives and stories as to why they carried firearms?
Certainly, yeah. They definitely had different perspectives. So, I mean, that was one of actually the interesting parts of doing this research, is that there was definitely, so what I just described earlier on the first half of the segment about kind of the moral politics and the responsibility and that sort of thing, I found that pretty much across the board with the people that I talked to. But the question of race came out in really interesting ways. So one of the things that's really unique about the Metro Detroit, gun culture in Metro Detroit, gun carry culture in Metro Detroit, is that African Americans are actually licensed at higher rates than white residents, which is kind of surprising for a variety of reasons. For example, we think of white Americans as sort of, you know, the prototypical gun owner and gun carrier. And because one of the reasons you can be disbarred from even getting a license is if you have a felony record. And we know that African American men tend to be more likely to have felony records. But nevertheless, African Americans in Detroit have more licenses per capita than white residents. And what I found that this really played out in terms of how they understood their role vis-a-vis police, vis-a-vis public law enforcement, and how they saw themselves as a role model for the community, particularly in Detroit. So one of the people that I actually opened the book with is this African-American man in his late 30s that I call Jason. Jason's an open carrier. He carries his gun openly in a holster, and he basically takes long walks around Detroit. And one of the stories that he told me was about how he was actually stopped by police who he described looked at him like he was Frankenstein. And the interesting part of the story was that he, you know, this is happening, and the police take his gun. He goes in, you know, into the back of the police car. The police are running his numbers. Everything's registered. Everything's legal. So, and this is happening on Woodward, which is a pretty busy street. Mm-hmm. And there happens to be a bus stop on the corner. People are gathering, not really because of Jason, but because there's a bus stop there. And, you know, Jason kind of narrates it and says, you know, I you know, I knew they were all thinking, here's another black man going to jail for a gun. And so he's recording all this and actually hands me the recording. I listen to it. He describes it and basically says, you know, at the end of the, you know, the police give me back my gun, they drive off, and everybody just starts cheering. It starts to cheer because they can't believe the police gave me back my gun. And so he uses this story to sort of launch into this, you know, this discussion of how he, you know, sees himself sort of as a model for other other men in his community, that, you know, stay out of trouble and you can be just like me. You can carry a gun openly. So that is the kind of story that I think really speaks powerfully to how guns and this kind of idea of citizenship and exercising rights really matters in kind of very unexpected ways in the contemporary context of gun carry culture.
Let's bring our callers in now with their stories. We've got Jenna on the line in Monticello. Jenna, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I have been owning guns and using guns since I was around 10 years old. I still own a couple guns with my boyfriend, and we always keep them in a locked cabinet at our house and carry them usually in a case whenever we have to bring them out hunting. And that's pretty much all we use them for. But ever since the concealed and carry law, I've been pretty interested and have been debating about getting it, because as also a bartender as a second job, it's scary having to close up as a girl all by yourself, and nowadays you can't trust people like you used to be able to. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with guns as long as you know how to use them.
Jenna, thanks a lot for that call. A lot there that we could dig into. Jennifer, first of all, she said mostly she uses guns for hunting, doesn't carry them around. That's a big part still of the gun-owning community, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, historically, the U.S. has been, you know, there's been a, you know, a lot of, the gun culture has been really rooted in sort of rural America. And that's what's kind of interesting about gun carry culture is that, you know, as people are moving out of rural areas, this is kind of the new urban and suburban, American gun culture. But obviously hunting is still, an important part of gun culture. And actually, there's a lot of evidence suggesting that women are, getting involved in hunting in record numbers, that women are one of the fastest growing groups of concealed carriers. So that's also something interesting. So my book actually focuses mostly on men, but I will say that this narrative of, you know, women thinking about, okay, I'm a real estate agent and I'm going into an abandoned house, or I'm working late at a bar and I'm closing out. That was the kind of narrative that I heard a lot from.
And something that Jenna said that really resonated with your book. Oh, it looks like we've lost Jennifer Carlson. We'll bring her back on the line. We're talking to sociologist Jennifer Carlson. Her new book is Citizen Protectors, The Everyday Politics of Guns in an Age of Decline. She wanted to get past the pro-con debate in guns and embed herself, meet with people who own guns, interview them, become an NRA-certified gun trainer to find out what motivates people to own guns, to carry them, conceal or openly. Taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Want to hear your stories about why you do or don't own a gun, why you do or don't carry them openly. 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Jennifer, we heard from Jenna. She said the line that struck me, and it fits a lot with your book, you can't trust people anymore. And a lot of the people you talk to have the perception of things aren't what they used to be. There was a better time. We're not in that anymore. That's why we need guns to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because on the one hand, you know, crime has dropped, and, you know, actually a lot of, you know, a lot of the gun carriers that I talk to would say, hey, you know, I know crime is down. This is actually an argument for why we should have guns, because the fact that concealed carry has taken off while crime has dropped shows that it doesn't at least increase crime. But there's also this other narrative that isn't so much about crime, but about community really changing, community ties changing, that people have a different relationship to their community. And so I think the sense of, you know, that neighbors are different, I think that sort of erosion is actually kind of even more powerful maybe than, you know, the sense of crime rates per se.
Back to our callers now. We've got Chris on the line in Madison. Chris, hi.
Yes, I just wanted to say that the author hits the nail right on the head. I am a healthcare provider, and also a reservist, and I just got back from being a sheepdog for the entire country for a year. And I would go to one step further to say that anyone who doesn't possess the equipment and knowledge to protect themselves and their families against criminals is morally irresponsible.
Chris, thanks for the call, and that he's not alone in that, Jennifer. I think you talked to people about that who felt it wasn't just their responsibility. They saw this as a duty of a moral citizen to carry firearms, protect not just themselves but others.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, that the caller nails it on the head in terms of this kind of a language about talking about moral responsibility and that sort of thing. And so that obviously also raises the question of training and how much training should be required, which is actually a debate within, you know, among gun advocates and gun carriers. Should there be training requirements? If so, what should that look like? And that's also, you know, there, with the rise of sort of permitless carry and this notion that if you can own it, you should be able to carry it. That, I think, is actually kind of the new frontier of the gun debate.
Thanks a lot for the call. Jim in Rice Lake is with us next. Jim, hi.
Yes, I don't carry guns. I don't advocate it. I believe this country is full of morally bankrupted people, such as your previous caller, because this, we in Western society have one of the highest rates of untreated mental illness in the world. And we have the easiest and greatest open access to firearms in the world, which leads to slaughters of moviegoers in Colorado and children in schools in Connecticut. And then we have people simply sacrificing public safety for their xenophobic pleasure of owning a gun.
Jim, thanks for the call. So that's another perspective. You talked more to the gun owners, but this is a concern. Too many guns, mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily trust everybody to be out there being a moral citizen protector, having mm-hmm. access to these guns.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's a great perspective as well, to think about, you know, what my book really looks at is this sort of the moral politics of gun carriers and gun culture and trying to understand gun carry culture. But there's this whole other question, which is how do the laws we pass, how do gun control policies actually work on the ground? How is it that someone's background gets checked? What are the different processes that an application goes through? So that's actually my next book, is actually looking at this question. So I'm interviewing police officers. I'm talking to the people who actually process the concealed pistol license applications to actually find out, you know, how is it that people do or do not slip through the cracks. So yes, next in about 5 years, I'll be able to answer and address that a little bit more. But I think that's kind of the key question, because we talk about, you know, gun laws and gun policies at this very kind of meta level, but in terms of how this actually works on the ground, it's a pretty complicated question.
Back to our callers. Kurt is with us in Galesville. Kurt, hi.
Hi there. I was just telling the screener that I'm a self-described liberal, but I also feel it's important for people that feel that comfortable owning firearms to keep them. And there's two reasons. One is I think it's our moral responsibility to maintain status quo based on our rich history of militia in this country. And believe me, I don't go to any militia meetings. I'm not a anti-government person, but I feel that just the fact that I own a gun helps maintain the status quo. The other point I wanted to make is I actually grew up in Barack Obama's old neighborhood in Chicago, which is a very liberal neighborhood. And in that neighborhood, I did not feel a need to own a gun. However, I did move into a more rural area, and we had a prowler come by, and it took 45 minutes for a police officer to come and investigate. So it's very helpful to have a firearm if you're in a rural situation. So it's something that most city dwellers don't really understand.
Kurt, thanks for the call. And actually, Jennifer, a lot of the city dwellers you talk to relate similar situations, or that they don't trust that police arrive quickly enough.
Yeah, exactly. When I was doing this research, now this response time has dropped dramatically, but when I was doing the research, the response time for Detroit police to get to a call was on average about 58 minutes. Now that's not, they've actually lowered it quite a way, quite a bit. But I think that that's something to kind of really think about, not just in terms of rural areas, but also urban areas. And the other thing I wanted to say also is, you know, we hear a lot about this kind of great American crime drop, that crime has dropped across the U.S. But when you actually look at the numbers, crime is still very concentrated, and some places, you know, some places have really benefited from that crime drop, other places not as much. So in Detroit, for example, Detroit in 2012 had one of their highest murder rates since the early 90s. So this is something that kind of needs to be part of the public discourse, that, you know, this, that it's not just these, we have to get away from kind of the macro level, crime is up or crime is down, rural, you know, there's, you know, these kind of presumptions about police presence in rural versus urban America. And
Jennifer, we'll have to leave it there. That was Jennifer Carlson. Her new book is Citizen Protectors.